summit meeting. Give us some description of what happened and the date.
Well,
the past week.
A pre-summit meeting was held in Reykjavik, Iceland, between Mikhail Gorbachev of the Soviet Union and President Reagan of the United States. And it appeared that they were about to reach an agreement on limitation of missiles and nuclear armaments, and their meeting fell apart because Gorbachev was insisting that Reagan give up the strategic defense, which is commonly known as the Strategic Defense Initiative, SDI, which is commonly known as Star Wars. Reagan refused to give it up, and I think that's going to be a battle in the Senate, and that's another reason I'm voting for Edgar. And I think that I feel it, without being knowledgeable in the field, I think we probably don't need Star Wars. There are enough armaments in the world already, and I felt it was wrong of Reagan not to give up Star Wars when he had a chance to reach an accord on nuclear arms with the Soviet.
Could you tell us a little more detail about what the accord was?
Well,
what they were willing to give up,
the
Russians.
I only know what I read in the newspapers.
Yeah.
I don't know any more than anybody else about
that. Allow reductions.
There were going to be reduction of nuclear arms
in Europe,
especially mid-range missiles that threatened European community.
Plus the long range.
Well, there was a decision also on long range, but I think the decision of Reagan not to agree to giving up Star Wars has really hurt us in the European community, because they're the people who are immediately threatened if there is a Soviet attack.
Well, how do you feel about Reagan taking the initiative and making such a pronouncement when he could have said, we'll study it? Why did he have to make that decision?
I don't know. Is this a part of my background? I don't think it is.
How you feel about it says here,
political,
politics.
This is the future. We're really not wanting to talk about
that. I talked about my politics, but I think my opinions on international affairs are of no importance to...
Really?
No.
Okay. But what he's done, wait a minute, give him credence. Some researcher wants to know what was happening in your lifetime at this period. And here, look what took place last week, and we have it on tape, right?
Right.
And how you felt about it.
Okay. Now, what I think I would like to know is, if you were to pick one thing as sort of your main contribution, you know, you are a reporter, you have really worked on this newspaper, what do you think?
Well, I don't know that there's any one thing. I think that working for the Post-Gazette, Post-Gazette was a good newspaper long before I came here. I hope that I contributed something to its credibility in the community and the feeling among people in Pittsburgh that the Post-Gazette is the much better of the two newspapers in Pittsburgh.
And you have made that contribution.
I hope that I have made that
contribution.
But that's for others to judge.
Well, that's what we're talking about right now. How do you view your accomplishments, successes, and failures?
I think my accomplishments have been modest. Newspaper people are, in a sense, voyeurs. Mm-hmm. We don't do the things. We record what others have done. Sometimes some people in the newspaper business, although they're recording what others have done, become as well known as the people in government or in business, in politics or in sports or in science. The reporters and the editorial writers and the columnists become as well known, or even better known, than the people whose accomplishments they're recording.
Sure, nice.
And
observation, yeah. But we're talking here, and we've heard about your successes. They want to know if you have any failures to discuss.
I don't know that I had any failures. I think I've had a modest success as a reporter.
Yes.
There is an old saying about the young boy who at 18 realized he wasn't going to be another Shakespeare, and at 20 realized he was never going to be the editor of the New York Times. And I was neither. So my successes overall, I think, have been modest.
I think you're too modest about your successes, though.
There are some, and we know that, there are columnists and writers who are nationally known. If you're in Pittsburgh, you're locally known, but you have no national recognition. But that's all right.
But as a newspaper reporter, and you've devoted your whole life to it, how do you feel about the New York Times and the fact that it is the number one newspaper in the United States, and it's Jewish?
If you noticed, only this week, Abe Rosenthal, who's been the executive editor of the New York Times, is stepping down November 1st, 1986, because he'll become 65 years of age. He's being succeeded by Max Frankel, who is Jewish and has been editor of the editorial page, was born in Germany, and one of their other leading editors, one of the Rosenthals, was born in Tel Aviv, although he grew up in Portland, Oregon. Mm-hmm. I know there is some criticism of the New York Times that its ownership and editors are Jewish, but do you know that I will get into the subject now, that the New York Times has shown some anti-Israeli and it's been somewhat anti-Israel in its policy.
True.
And I will dwell on this because I think it's relevant in at this time that we're talking about this. The Post Gazette in the Jewish community in Pittsburgh is considered very anti-Israel. The editorial policy of the Post-Gazette is anti-Israel in the views of most Jewish leaders and devoted Jews in Pittsburgh who are strongly pro-Israel. Any time that a situation arises for the Post-Gazette to editorialize and appear to take the Arab side is really unappreciated by the Jewish community, and I'm sure that some Jewish leaders have met at times with Bill Block, the publisher, lately with John Craig, the editor, in the past with Andy Bernhard and Frank Hawkins, who were editors of the Post-Gazette, in an effort to try to bring the Post-Gazette around to what they consider a more pro-Israeli policy. The Post-Gazette has, for the most part, the Post-Gazette editorial board would not consider the Post-Gazette anti-Israel, but Jewish community leaders,
I
know.
How do you feel about this?
I think that for the most part we have been the Post Gazette has not accepted the Israeli view in many situations and has taken what can be construed as an anti-Israel position.
Tell me.
But this is the nature of the newspaper business, and the Post Gazette is very objective in its reporting of Israeli affairs. In the news columns, but it's the nature of the business that a newspaper on its editorial page can voice the opinions that it feels are correct.
Well, what we'd like to know as readers of a newspaper is that policy decided by Blocks?
I don't think it's decided by the Blocks themselves. I think it's a policy that's decided upon after discussion at the Post-Gazette. As all editorials are decided on, there's a daily meeting at the Post-Gazette every day at about 10 o'clock. It's attended by William Block, the publisher, and by the editor, who is now John Craig, and by probably three editorial writers. They go into this meeting every morning and start talking about subjects that are in the news and deciding what subjects they want to editorialize on, and then they decide which editorial writer is going to write the editorial. If it's a subject on Middle East, it might go to an editorial writer who is interested in Middle East subjects. If it's on the environment, it would be assigned to an editorial writer who's interested in the environment, and so on. But I think the policy on Israel, as well as on other matters, is pounded out in these daily meetings. And I think, I'm sure, Bill Block is a type of guy who would not push his ideas on several other people if he felt that they had a good point. I'm sure he would accede to their their attitudes. And
Do you ever write editorials? Only briefly, some time ago,
when I came to the Post-Gazette, and I think we were in more modest financial circumstances, we only had two editorial writers, so that when one of them was on vacation or on a trip, I was called in occasionally to write editorials, but I tried to limit myself to what we call Grant Street, and write mostly on local issues with which I was more familiar.
So you weren't involved.
Being a newspaper reporter doesn't make you an expert on national or international affairs, because as a reporter, especially as a general assignment reporter, when you come in the morning, you never know what you're going to do. You go to a fire, to a murder, to a court hearing, to an interview. I know that this is a small example, but I know I came in one day and was told that a government figure from Bulgaria was in the city, and I was going out in a half hour to interview him. How many people have any background about Bulgaria? The only thing I could do in a situation like that, and I did many, many other times, was go to our files, read up as quickly as I could about Bulgaria, and at least have a very superficial background. Yeah. But I found it always best before going out on a story to brief myself as much as possible on the subject.
Well, before we forget about that other important thing we were discussing, which was the editorial policy on a newspaper vis-a-vis Israel, do you have any feelings about German Jews, of German extraction, who have different feelings about Zionism than Jews from Russia? Do you have anything to say about that?
No, I think, well, when I was growing up in Dayton, and maybe this will interest anybody in the Jewish community, I was the son of Russian immigrants who were religious, who were from and were Orthodox. They looked upon the members of Temple Israel in Dayton as the Dacha. They were the German Jews. But over a period of years, I see that the children of Russian immigrants are members of Rode of Sholem Temple, possibly by now, possibly the majority of members of Reformed congregations are the children and grandchildren of Russian immigrants. And I think that if the German Jews in the 19th century and the early 20th century did not feel a closeness with Russian Jews, that they were made aware because of the Nazi genocide that we're all Jews and we must have a close community. And I think there's a closer alignment now between the what you would call the German Jews and the Russian Jews than there was when I was growing up.
But in respect to Israel, do you feel there's a different feeling amongst German Jews who do not support Zionism, and as a result are liberal on the Arab side.
I haven't found too many Jews, either of German or Russian extraction, who are actually on the Arab side.
Really?
Very, no.
Or
no,
open to it.
No, I think some, even my friends who are of Russian, the children of Russian Jews, question a lot of policies, a lot of Israeli policies. I feel that in the if you're Jewish in the United States and criticize something that Israel does, they have people here almost think you're anti-Israeli. As a matter of fact, 50% of the Israeli people don't agree with the government.
True.
And are free to criticize it.
Would you like to ask a question?
I shouldn't get too much into my political.
No, yeah, but we're supposed to. It says here.
Two things
politics.
I want you to do. We can finish. We're finished.
Oh.
You said you wanted a picture.
All right. If we're finished, I'm going to turn it off.
Turn it
and
off.
You don't want to make a last final.
No, I want to thank the National Council of Jewish Women for thinking I was important enough to interview.
Yeah. What would you like the future to be?
What?
You're supposed to right.
About the future.
A pronouncement about the future. What do you think we face?
As your grandchildren, what would you like this?
Well,
what about
my grandchildren? My grandchildren live far away from Pittsburgh. They're in a small town in Arizona, and I am afraid of one thing. I'm afraid that a lot of Jewishness dies with my wife, B, and me. Our children and grandchildren are not growing up too Jewish. In my home, my parents spoke Yiddish a great deal. I can speak some Yiddish. I don't use it conversationally, but I understand it, and I can speak some Konrad and Abyssal Yiddish.
Good.
But it's going to die with me, and I remember when our son Tom was young, maybe 8 or 9 years old, my wife doesn't speak Yiddish at all, but she understands a few words. And when I wanted to say something to her that I didn't want Tom to know what I was saying, I uttered a few Yiddish words to B, and Tom said, "There's that code again." So I'm afraid that Yiddish and Jewishness, a lot of it is going to has died out.
That's true for all of us.
Yeah.